Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Amelia Clark on her new comic book, Game of Thrones, and joining the Marvel Universe. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Yes, proud and excited to say Amelia Clark, first-time guest on the podcast today. Have wanted to have Amelia on for a while. I've certainly talked to her over the years, but never for a lengthy conversation like this. And what a great excuse to catch up, because she is now a comic book creator. She is the co-writer and creator of Mom, Mother of Madness, a three-issue comic book series about a single mom superhero that is well worth checking out. I got a chance to watch the first, or rather read the first issue, and it is fantastic and funny and quirky and all the things that Amelia is. It is available right now for pre-order on Amazon or wherever you get your comics, so definitely check that out. Get your hands on a copy of Mom, Mother of Madness from the mind of Amelia Clark. So exciting to see an actor exploring different creative avenues. And Amelia Clark is certainly somebody who has been entertaining us for many years, most notably, of course, on Game of Thrones. Yes, if you know me, you know I was late to the party, but I got there. I got there before the end, guys, and I saw what all the hubbub was about. So we had a lovely chat about Game of Thrones, about that ending of Game of Thrones, which, of course, is still controversial to many. We talk about her joining the Marvel Universe very soon. I don't know if you guys are aware, but Amelia Clark is going to be on Secret Invasion, the show that's going to be starring Samuel L. Jackson and Ben Mendelsohn and Olivia Colman, and yes, Amelia Clark. So some interesting stuff about that in here, as well as stuff on Solo and her comfort movie of choice, which was Sense and Sensibility, starring and written by her illustrious Last Christmas co-star, Emma Thompson. So a great conversation with Amelia. I know you guys are going to dig. Other stuff to mention, a lot is going on, of course. I teased, I think, recently my conversation with Tom Hiddleston. By the time you listen to this, I believe it should be up on MTV News' YouTube page. A fantastic catch-up with Tom about all things Loki, including a look back to our first meeting way back when in 2010 at Comic-Con. That was a blast to reminisce with him about that. Other things going on. Let's see, I chatted with Vin Diesel the other day about F9, the new Fast and the Furious movie. That's going to be up on MTV News pretty soon. We have a new Game Night episode up right now with Brie Larson and Jesse Ennis. That's over on the Happy, Sad, Confused Patreon page. If you guys haven't checked it out, I encourage you to just to see what it's all about and see if you're interested. Patreon.com/happysadconfused. Again, that's patreon.com/happysadconfused. And most notably, what you get there is on-camera versions of the podcast, including this Amelia Clark chat, if you want to view it instead of just listening to it, and the Game Night episodes, including episodes we've done so far with folks like Sam Heughan and Colin O'Donoghue and Jane Levy and Skylar Astin and Brie Larson and some other very, very notable folks coming up on that. So really thrilled about how Game Night is going. I think I'm going to leave it there because there's a lot going on. Oh, here's my one other plug. Saddened to see that, you know, obviously last week's guest was John M. Chu, the director of In the Heights. The film didn't perform hugely at the box office, at least not in the first weekend. I'd encourage you guys still to check it out in theaters if possible. Just because it doesn't do well at the box office doesn't make it any less, you know, worth seeing. And in fact, this is a film that I think and hope should still be in the conversation for some of the, you know, the best films made this year, and I don't know anybody that's seen it that's been disappointed. So try and see it in a theater if you can, and at the very least, check it out on HBO Max, because that's one that I don't want to see just fall away and people forget about too quickly, because In the Heights was a special work. So that's my unsolicited plug for the week. All right, let's get on to the main event. A fantastic chat with the delightful Amelia Clark. Again, check out her new comic book, Mom, Mother of Madness, wherever you get your comics, and enjoy our chat about all things Thrones, comic books, Jane Austen. Where else are you going to get that triumvirate than in a chat with Amelia Clark? Here it is. Amelia Clark, welcome to Happy, Sad, Confused, even if it happens to be on my weird little Zoom box on my computer. I'm happy to have you. It's good to see you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I am happy, not sad or confused about, maybe confused. No, I'm not confused.
We'll see about that by the end of this, how you're feeling. I'll check in at the end. How's Ted doing, first of all? Your dog mom, as I understand it.
Yes, he's so good. Can't believe you just said that exact moment. Ted right now, because he knows mum's in the room and he's not allowed in the room. So I just keep hearing like, of him like, okay, still he thinks he might be able to slip under the door one day, but yeah.
He's the real star over there. Well, I'm a new dog dad, and my Lucy is literally at my feet, so we've both got people competing for our attention here, so it's okay.
No, that's all good. What kind of puppy do you have?
She's a rescue pit mix.
Oh, gorgeous.
Gorgeous, the sweetest thing. I keep saying, like, now I think I have a semblance of I know a little bit what it's like to be you or any kind of celebrity walking on the street, because I get so much more attention than people like do triple takes. They're like, oh my god, what is that beautiful thing with you? And I'm like, oh, this is
it's the greatest conversation starter.
Yeah,
I mean, because obviously I've had Ted all throughout. He was a pre-lockdown puppy, but I had him all the way throughout that time, and taking him on his dog walks, and you're like, oh my, I've been able to interact with human beings this entire time. On my one designated dog walk a day, I get to have the chats with a safe distance. I get the, you know, I can chat to people, and
it's kind of perfect. Yeah, I'm generally a kind of an antisocial person, but I feel like Lucy's bringing me out of my shell after all these years. It's good.
They do that. They really do. Yeah.
So we were exchanging pleasantries, because it's always kind of the first conversation starter when you see somebody for the first time in a long time in this insanity. You know, it's all on a sliding scale, right? How we're doing. You seem to be doing well, but you have been, you were saying you've essentially been kind of in that box I'm seeing you in for most of the last year.
The whole year. Get me out of the box. It really, the biggest thing is that I have not worked in this time. I have a production company, I have a charity, I'm busy, like I've worked, but I haven't done what I do. I haven't done my day job in a year.
That which defines you. Who are you when you aren't doing what you do?
Tell me about it. And this is the interesting thing as well, because I get to put on a few different hats rather than just acting.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm not the only actor that experiences this. But I was talking to a writer friend of mine the other day, and I was like, oh, I shouldn't be complaining so much, but it's just so different. Like, how do you get the, you know, we're in a profession where we chose our careers because we loved what we do. That's so lucky. And he was like, well, no, you don't get the zingy euphoria. He's like, I can have the zingy euphoria of the good stuff that my job gives me. Anytime I open up my computer, there's a chance that might happen. He's like, for you to get the zingy euphoria, you need 70 people minimum to make that happen. Like, that's you're relying on, and it's that's the crux of
maybe you should
he wasn't currently acting.
You should have a little laugh track installed in your flat. Just something every time you walk into the room, something.
Oh, well done. Well, no, so it's it's not even the like what you're getting from an audience. It's doing it with this other person and they're being a witness to that, be it a camera or just three other people in a half empty theater, that are witnessing you both being different people and getting the, I miss that. So that's what I'm really missing. I'm missing.
That makes sense. Like, yeah. I mean, well, I've even had that conversation over the years, even pre-pandemic with actors. Cause like, especially I talked about like, you know, you need a theater, you need people. And it's like why some actors actually, as painful as it is, almost enjoy the auditioning process, because it's like, oh, you're actually, I get to do it, at least. I get to
do the acting thing. It's not just Ted. It's not just my, you know, and I'm not the kind of girl to sit at home and you know, do my Hamlet soliloquy to the wall. Like, that ain't me. It's, there's plenty of other weird creative stuff that I spend my time doing when I'm on my own. And I definitely have the laughter track in my head at all times. I'm not adverse to talk, you know, Ted is just a vehicle for me to talk out loud. Like, that's just basically it. I guess
Ted's heard it all this last year. Ted's gotten some great performances, some cries, really, perhaps, who knows?
Really, yes. Yeah.
So what has filled the void creatively? I mean, has it, we're going to get into the comic in a bit, but like, has it been all the kind of different endeavors, or have you found like, a lot of actors I've talked to have done podcasts or other voiceover work?
Yeah. So, I mean, podcasts was something that I was going to do, but that just it didn't feel right for me. There was a specific thing that I was going to do for it. And so creatively, reading all the scripts, being I have a production company, so I'm constantly working on that. And then what has filled the creative void? I mean, the stuff that always fills the creative void, watching, reading, listening. Yeah. I have, during lockdown, I may not have a starter for my sourdough, but I do have a shitty old keyboard and now the ability to play it. So nice. I have learned piano, which has been really, because I sing. That's the other thing that you can't do on your own. I mean, you can sing in the shower. But yeah, so I started learning the piano so I could accompany myself, and I'm now...
You're a one-woman band.
There you go. I just need my little drum kit at my feet. So that
she's going to be busking soon on the corners of London. Just look out for her.
Yeah, coming to an Oxford Street near you. But that's been a genuinely creative, fulfilling experience of like, oh, I feel blank. Yeah, I'm going to sit at the piano and play something, and that has helped.
I was alluding to earlier, though, it seems like maybe I misread stuff on social media, because that's obviously how we find out what people are up to nowadays. Yeah. That's our new research tool. But did you escape your environs at least to jump out of a plane in celebration of your birthday?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I did. So I thought, what's more frightening than turning 34, jumping out of a plane? So let's just find somewhere in the middle and do it. And then you can be scared of doing that on that day. So I did it. I had a bunch of friends who were going to come. It was all COVID friend. I mean, the whole damn thing's outside, obviously.
Right.
I had a bunch of friends who were going to come and join me. Everyone chickened out apart from my mother and my brother.
That's sweet. That's amazing.
I'm not going to say how old she is because she'll kill me.
Yeah.
My mother, who had me and a certain age and is, you know, she's now in her 30s. It was the greatest thing that's ever happened, because I was the last person to jump out of the plane. As the door opens, because you're like, you're in this like riggedy old plane, and the massive door opens, and my mum is at the front next to the door, and she just turns around to me and goes, "Woo! Who is this woman? You pop out of the car. What's going on?"
She's like, Patrick Swayze in Point Break all of a sudden. She's That's amazing.
Yeah. So and
how did you take to it? Did you enjoy it, or was it like, what the fuck am I doing?
No. I love it. I absolutely loved it. I'm not a bungee jumping kind of girl, but I love a theme park. So the idea, it was just, I loved it. I had a minute of, oh, I can't breathe. Oh God, I can't breathe. And then when you pull the parachute, you're just...
Amazing. Wow. Amazing. I'll take your word for it. I don't know if I have the disposition, but I admire your...
Surprise yourself.
Okay. Look, yeah. I'm talking to human beings. That's a start. So I'm starting to come out of my shell in my 40s. We'll see.
There you go.
You mentioned your mom. I'm curious, like, you know, as we kind of go back into the career and your life as a kid, who helped you define your interest? Was it your mom? Was it your dad? Was it your older brother? Because I do want to get a sense of sort of like how you kind of formulated the things you were into as a kid.
It's a funny one to track, because on the one side I have my dad, who is he was in theater, musicals, right. And so he was a sound designer, and so music and creativity was always there. We were always going to see his stuff. He had a incredible life, being like at the forefront of the 60s and the all of it. You know what I mean? He was a roadie for a band. He took all the drugs. Live music, like live performances, was what made him tick. So I grew up with that kind of knowledge and kind of wanting to be interested in what my dad was doing when he was a kid, and like the Beatles, oh my god, and the Rolling Stones, and all these incredible, Bob Dylan, oh my god. And so there was that. My mum, not a musical bone in her body, she loves a bit of Motown, but like, and very driven and very career focused. And so that energy gave me my appetite for work. Right. I think.
You get the drive from mom, but you get the artistic kind of a sensibility.
My dad was a chill kind of guy.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? Like, there was a lot of chillness there. And then my brother, I wanted to be him. So his taste in music was like on point and was always the coolest. Like he was like on it. Like, and he knew the best films and knew all the cool stuff. Whereas my taste in my family was a little bit saccharine. It was a little bit different. It was, you know, I was, when I found my own taste in music and film and TV, it wasn't what maybe the rest of my family were interested in. And I'm saying all of these things because it's a complicated thing, because my dad did not want me to be an actor. He really, really didn't. Like, he really didn't. Like, he saw it every day. It was like, these people are sad and out of work.
Yeah.
That is 80% of an actor's life is that.
He wasn't wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was never there going, I don't believe you can do it. He was just going, as a loving father, I don't think I want to see my kid go through this. Because it doesn't look like you're going to be happy most of the time. So me finding acting, I don't know where it came from. I really like, aside from clearly wanting to be the center of attention at all times, I was always glued to the TV. I always wanted to be read to. I always wanted to read out loud. I always wanted to read to other people. I read a huge amount. I watched TV all the time. I watched movies all the time. I was listening to music all the time. I always needed stimulus. Do you know what I mean? I always was kind of like itching for that. And I used to think that was a real... Like, my mom always says, as I was a kid, I just wanted to eat sweets and watch TV. But looking back now, I'm like, yeah, because that's, and now look at what I'm doing. Like, I'm in that world of it. That kind of, it sort of tracks that is,
yeah.
You know, I was wanted stories in some way.
Please, eating sweets and watching TV probably describe that. That's on my epitaph. That's what Josh Horowitz did most of his life.
Exactly.
I'm with you totally. So I've been asking folks to select kind of one of their favorite comfort movies, because, you know, especially in the last year and a half, we've needed them more than ever. So the one you selected came out around when you were 10. Tell us your comfort movie, and did you encounter this movie back then, or did it take a little bit later?
No, it took a little bit later. So my comfort movie is Sense and Sensibility. I'm British, it goes without saying, I love a period drama. Love it. The actresses in this movie are my favorite actresses. You have Dame Emma Thompson, you have Kate Winslet, beautiful, beautiful actresses. And it's an elevated rom-com, let's call it what it is. Yeah. But it is, I discovered it in my teens for sure. and didn't really, it's taken a long time for me to be okay with my own taste in films. Like, I could have put Chinatown, you know,
right.
I could have done a bunch of other stuff, but truly when I'm feeling like I just need a big warm hug, every time I've watched that film, I've gone, it's just lovely. Everything's going to be lovely.
Yeah.
And so I can't remember the first time that I first watched it, but it's just, it left such an impact on me. And I think it is the acting that does it more than anything. I think it is finding those actresses that you get to go, I want to do that. I want to do what they're doing. I'm just, it's heartbreaking and beautiful and poignant, because I'm not with a comfort movie. I don't want it to be, I don't just put on like any old, a bit of junk just to kind of like not feel anything. I need the opposite. Like I was going to put Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, the most recent one with Gary Oldman. Like, I need a story. I need something. My ultimate comfort is a movie that just goes, I'm going to grab you and I'm not going to let you go for however long it is.
But that one, that's like you're, I feel like you have to be engaged. You can like, I mean, in Sensibility, you will be engaged too, but it's sort of more of a passive experience. I feel like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is like, it's different definitions. It's like, there's something for everybody. I remember like Zachary Quinto selected like Magnolia, and like, I love Magnolia more than
any,
but no, I wouldn't call it a comfort movie. Yeah,
No. The frogs alone are enough to be like, creeped out. Is it going to rain frogs one day? Is that going to happen? Because apparently it could happen.
So for those that don't know, obviously, of course, based on the Jane Austen work, but really I think what works beyond the acting also is the combination of Emma Thompson's screenplay, and you have Ang Lee directing, which is...
exactly it. Yeah.
Amazing.
The cinematography is beautiful. It feels like it encapsulates the time. I mean, you're with Kate Winslet the whole time being like, when are you just going to stop being so like repressed? So you get that part of your brain being taken care of when you're watching it. But the kind of quivering withholding of feeling until it all comes out, it's just so satisfying to track that. And then it does, and you get the double wedding, and it's just,
you've of course worked with Emma relatively the last couple of years on Last Christmas. Did you come clean on your?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to.
100%. Yeah.
Just get it out of the open.
Where you're like, you get this all the time. I'm really sorry, but
let me just say my piece.
Sorry. I just think you're incredible. Like, it's a very important film to me. And it's weird because I didn't watch it for a while after I worked with her, because I was like, is it weird? Because she's like, I can call her my friend now. Like, we text, we call, we hang out, we go for a walk. Is it going to be weird? And it isn't weird at all. It's still fabulous. I still like, because it's a different era.
That's fantastic. Okay, so a lot to get to. Let's get to your latest project without any further ado. I read the first issue of Mom. M-O-M, yes. Mother of M-O-M. Madness.
Yes.
Let's talk to me about, like, does this begin as just an idea, like an idea, and then like, what am I going to do with it? Or was there the idea to dip your toe into like the comic book world? Like, what is it, the chicken or the egg? How does this one come about?
It started with the comic book world, for sure. It all came at once. It was very much wouldn't it be funny if you had a comic book heroine who was relatable and believable and wore an outfit that she could pee in. And if she got hungry, if she got full, she could unbutton the thing. Like, it was the whole thing. I wanted something that was really relatable. And we were laughing and joking about it. And that was that. And then the next day I woke up and I was like, I'm still thinking about that thing. I think I'm just gonna explore this a little bit further. And then it just snowballed. And now it's made. Like,
it's a thing.
It has literally been that process. It's been a kind of, the idea happened and then everything just fell into place in a way that you're like, I have to make it. This is too, not easy, but this is, things are falling into place in a way that is allowing this to kind of be sped up.
What's the satisfaction level of seeing something like this realized versus like seeing your based on a magazine or a movie poster? Is it different to see your this realized with your name on the cover as the co-writer? Like, what's it like?
Yeah, it's wild. It's so different. It's just completely different. I am very British in my don't handle praise very well. Don't really, like, I very rarely agree with someone if they're like, that was really cool. I'm like, right. Yeah, well, you know what? 7,000 other people were there to make that happen. So I kind of like, you're not really complimenting me. You're complimenting the costume department or the camera department or the director or the whatever it is. And with this, you're like, there's a team of women, because I only hired women to create this project. There's a team of women that are behind this. But yeah, that's, it's more that I had an idea and now it's in my hands. That's trippy. That's like,
yeah,
another level of, oh my God. And it goes beyond any kind of I wonder how it's going to be received. Of course it's going to hurt if everyone's like, this sucks. This is the worst thing I've ever read. You ruined it. We hate you. Goodbye. You're canceled. That would hurt. However, if this is only for 3 people in the world and they like it, genuinely, I mean, this is my whole heart. That's enough. Like, that really, I made a thing.
Yeah.
I'm happy. I made
a thing. It wouldn't exist without you. Yes. It's there was insane. Before. Yes. What was your relationship with comic books growing up? Like, were you into them? Was it your brother's thing? Like, was it like, well, because I mean, like, there's a stigma again, and the comic book world for decades has been built mostly for dudes and catered to dudes.
Yes.
Did you feel that growing up? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I never felt like it was an environment that was for me. There are a bunch of things that I watched and I read and I absorbed that were for me as the teenage girl or as the prepubescent girl or whatever it was. But my brother was massively into comics and I would find the women in them and love them and read them and enjoy them. And then, you know, you've got your Wonder Womans and then speed it up to the movies are being made. And then I'm like, oh, now I have complete access. Now I'm allowed. Now I'm kind of, I'm with all the other masses that are going to the movies and going, oh yeah, I remember this. Oh, and now it's being fully realized in front of my face. And now you have Captain Marvel and now you have these incredible women. So I also, like I said, I was kind of I just needed stories. I needed stimulation in some creative way growing up. Fantasy novels were something I was massively into and still am, like Philip Pullman till I die. Like they're just really, and so when kind of thinking up this world, it made so much sense that I would go here, not only because the comic book community has welcomed me with open arms and has followed me from franchise to franchise. Like, I feel at home there. I feel accepted there. I feel like they're, I just love them, basically. I love them. And so this seemed like a no-brainer for this to be the place that I would then write a story in. Not only because the joy of comics and fantastical fiction is that anything is possible. Your imagination can be as wild and as crazy as you like. And that's definitely where my imagination is, in the more cuckoo crazy land.
Well, it's in the title, Madness. The character in this, the lead character, she's a single mom. Her powers, and I don't know the whole story, just having read the first issue, but like, it's really connected to her physicality, to literally her menstruation. Like that's something I haven't read in a comic book before. And talk to me a little bit about that, because like, I don't know if I'm making too big a leap here, but like, you know, you obviously were very open about your own health struggles and being kind of like not feeling in control of your own body. Mm-hmm. I would imagine is a sense you had for many years.
Yeah.
Is there anything to relate to this character where like, she is not in control of her own powers in a way?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bunch of things. So like, you have your Wonder Woman's and your Captain Marvel's, but what I felt was missing and why I felt this actually made sense to be made is that Fleabag meets Deadpool bit for women, because Deadpool is nailing it. I'm gonna love that. I absolutely love it. And then you have what Fleabag has done to female stories in film and TV. And so I kind of was like, well, okay, so what if you had a superhero that was, that you could laugh with, at, and was relatable and was funny, like actually funny. I mean, dear God, people who are listening to this, if it's not actually funny, I'm sorry.
it's funny. I'll vouch for it.
Thank you very much. And so to try and create a space for that superhero to exist. And then as I started to get further into it, because I wrote like 50 pages of this, I wrote the whole thing. I wrote all the stories, all the characters. I wrote what the next things would be. I wrote like this bunch of stuff. It just all kind of came out. And in doing that, I started to realize that, okay, so we're talking about powers. This is fun. And I wanted to have the sense that it started as when you're on your period, you get all this stuff that is happening to you that you hate. Not only is it still a massive taboo, if you drop your tampon in the supermarket, you're going to be slightly embarrassed. There's no need for you to be embarrassed, but you probably will.
Right.
So there's that. But then there's also the hormonal changes that happen in your body that you don't like. Like, no, I'm not going to do that thing because of X, because I feel puffy, I feel tired, I feel angry, I feel sad, I feel happy, I feel all these things that are kind of out of your control that we're learned to feel shameful about. We're learned to feel like, because you can't control it, it's not yours, it's something that's happening to you. And by the way, people don't talk about this, and it's just not a nice place to be. So I wanted to try and create something whereby women could feel the truth of it, which is that it's a powerful thing that our bodies do, and that it is there in order for you to create a human being in your stomach. Like, that's mental, that's beautiful, that's powerful, it's incredible. But alongside that, I didn't want this to just be for women. I wanted it to be a female story, but I didn't want it to only be for them. Using the menstrual cycle, a period, as a vehicle to discuss, we have emotions, we are human beings. Society telling us to feel ashamed about that, that's not right. To embrace and accept your individuality and accept these feelings that we're all entitled to having, and so in turn making them superpowered,
right?
And having this woman's journey be the journey of a woman going, I hate myself, I hate myself, I hate myself, I suck, into, oh, I've been looking at this all wrong.
Yeah, run at it, embrace it, as opposed to hide it. And
yeah, look what I can do. Look what I'm capable of achieving when I am at peace with these things.
Yeah.
It's a grandiose statement for a comic, but hey, that was the energy behind going into this. So I wanted to try and find something that did that and also was funny and also was a very modern story. So you'll see when you read the comic, there's a bunch of nods to the climate that we're living in right now.
Right.
That you will see that it was fun to have that, to have, oh, the out, because normally with superheroes and with comics, they're in our world, but they're not in our world, or they're in another world, or they're in another universe, or they're in another kind of, and I wanted to have one that was like, poof, no, we're here. We're in a heightened version of here. For sure, but
we're here.
There's
a long history of when actors have done comics. Like, for instance, I remember like Keanu did a comic a couple of years ago, and then a couple of years passed, and you're like, wait, that character looks a little bit like Keanu, and then it's like we're developing this into a film or TV series. There's nothing wrong with that, but I'm just curious: is there an eye for this to be developed as something for yourself to star in for TV or film?
This is what I have to keep saying. It's not the reason why I made it.
Right.
Making it into a movie is not the reason why I made it. If that is what's going to happen to it, let's just deal with that when it happens. I didn't want my character that, I didn't want Maya to look a spitting image of me, because I just feel like that's a little narcissistic. I don't know. Right. Like, I just, like, I'm just like, well, I don't, that's not the, she's a whole other person. This is a whole character with like a bunch of attributes. So yeah, there's that.
So you all also are at long last going to dive headfirst into a comic book project.
Yeah.
Very soon.
Yes.
With an amazing cast. So clearly the concept and the scripts or stories are there, because you don't get you and Olivia Colman joining a Marvel show. Come on.
I really cried when I heard that she had officially joined. I was like,
can you give me some
a friend?
I know. So, I mean, obviously we're not going to spoil anything, but can you just give me a little backstory on sort of, was this in development for a while? Had you been talking to Marvel about various things, or was it this specific thing that came up that made sense?
This specific thing that came up. A producer, the main producer on it, showrunner on it, Chris, had worked at HBO. And so, yeah, he called me and he told me, and I put myself on tape. And then I got the job, and it was kind of
Amelia Clark has to put herself on tape for Marvel? Of course. What?
I love doing auditions, because then you get, not only do you get the thing where the person hiring you knows you can do it, which is really helpful.
Right.
You also are like, okay, cool. This is something we can do. Like the idea that when you just get hired without doing it, the first day on set becomes this like, oh no, I'm going to get on there and they're going to fire me because they never checked. That this is something we were all happy with. but also I think it's a Marvel thing. They ask everyone to tape, and I'm like, I'm never going to be the actor that's like, I don't tape. That's not what I do.
Beyond being part of Marvel, which clearly has a track record that's kind of unparalleled, they know what they're doing. Yeah. This character in particular is intriguing for you, I take it?
Yes. Now, I'm just gonna say one thing. The first people that I spoke to after getting the Marvel job was their security team. I am petrified. I literally live in fear that like something's gonna happen.
Okay.
And I'm gonna say something and somebody's gonna get upset.
We don't want that.
So, but yes,
you Chris play a character.
Told me the thing. I play a character, and I'm super into everything about it.
Super into the cat. I love Ben Mendelsohn, by the way. Ben Mendelsohn.
Oh my god!
Obsessed.
Me and my friends have a freaky little Ben Mendelsohn fan club.
Oh, yeah. He's in the category. I have like a couple obsessions in that vein. It's like Michael Shannon is one of my obsessions, and I put like Michael Shannon, Ben Mendelsohn, in like the special.
Yeah,
character actor leading man,
but
weird team.
No, exactly. But the Ben Mendelsohn, like our little thing of like, it's a thing. We're like, oh, Ben's in it. Yeah, we have. There's memes. It's a thing. So yeah, I was. That's I think the name that most of my mates are excited about. They're like, oh my god, you get to be near the real thing.
And you started relatively soon, I take it.
Yes, we start relatively soon. Again,
there's our breaking news headline. Amelia Clark confirms Secret Invasion starts relatively soon. It's okay. I don't need that. I'm curious, your history though, because like every actor nowadays has had a long history with these kinds of projects. Like according to, if you believe what you read, you were up for Sharon Carter way back when for Civil War. Do you remember that for Captain America? Or is that a lie?
I don't know that happened. I don't know. I could have been up for it and my agents never told me.
Got it. So I guess my broader question is, have you come close to doing stuff like this? Have you done the Marvel DC audition thing a lot or at all?
No, this is this is my first brush with Marvel. I feel like there was, the whole time I was in Game of Thrones, with time that one would imagine, this is me guessing, another, because none of us were in it. So I'm guessing it's like, we don't want to take someone that's in the middle of another massive franchise, which I totally respect.
Right.
Get. Or they just thought I was crap until now. I don't know. It's just a very real possibility. I think that Chris Gary is the person who championed me and got me this job.
Amazing.
And he's fabulous. Obviously, he's got fantastic taste.
Amazing taste, yeah.
But I'm super psyched to work with him. That's going to be amazing.
Have you talked to your old buddy Kit? I mean, he obviously had a recent big Marvel experience working on Eternals with Chloe Zhao.
Yes. I haven't spoken to him since getting this. I speak to his wife more than I speak to Kit. Because Rose is like my best mate as well. But he did. All I know is that he had a fabulous experience. I spoke to him a bunch when he was doing it, when he came back from it. And yeah, he just loved it.
So in the wake of Thrones, which, you know, obviously took up a tremendous amount of your life, just in terms of headspace, physical space, just time. What's it been like the last few years? I mean, like, you obviously, you had in the middle of, you were still doing Thrones when you did Terminator, and then after you do Last Christmas. I believe that was after you finished Thrones, probably.
Yeah, that was right afterwards. Yeah.
So I guess just the broader question is, and I, you know, has it been tough to kind of figure out, like, okay, what do I do now? Like, what are my priorities? Or, like, because it's hard. It's going to be hard to kind of live up to like a cultural phenomenon, no matter what. Oh,
yeah, a little bit. No, a little bit. It was around season 5 or 6 that I was like, this is going to end. What's up? What are we doing? Where are we going? What's happening? And the only thing that I cared about moving on from the show was that I got to act. I got to do some acting. And like the mind state that I had in the beginning of the show, I've always been very, I want to try everything. I want to see what fits. I want to be an actor that's acting in her 90s. There's no rush. There's no like strategy. Like, how do we get to the specific thing? I think the biggest change that happened after the show ended, or rather the last couple of seasons, was that I really am director led. Like, I really, really, really just want to work with directors that I think are offering something that is juicy for an actor. You know what I mean? So that could be two lines in a whatever film. It could be an indie with a director that has, it's a first film, whatever it is. The conversations that I have with a director are the personal connections that you crave for. I mean, it's no accident I did a play. Which is coming back. I'm so excited.
So this was Seagull, which you were about to do, literally, like you were in rehearsals, you were about to start. So it's going to... It's
4 previews.
Oh, you actually were doing previews already. Wow.
Yeah.
So that's not out of the system yet. You need to like kind of exercise that demon, I'm sure.
Yeah, massively. So I think that the... because I never felt when I was in the show, I never ever allowed myself to look at or be too aware of how it was being received, or how it was being, not even received, how it was being seen.
Right.
And I don't think I was ever capable of doing that because I was too in it. The show ended and I still don't quite know what it was that we did, but I don't feel like that has, like the end of that has in any way dampened what my hopes and expectations are for the next phase of my career.
Right.
Because I'm in it for the long run. I just, as long as I'm acting, I'm good. Like, and as long as it's whatever I, you know, and now I'm going to try this and I'm going to try that. And getting to be a producer and getting to be on that side of things has been so fulfilling and so illuminating. My God, how in God's name do producers deal with actors all the time? We're a nightmare. oh baby, like it's that's been illuminating. But also I was always so envious of the producers that would come onto a set and it'd be your day one and it'd be their day 10 year,
right?
And you're like, oh, you've got this connection, you've got this umbilical cord with this project that I'm truly jealous of. Like, I wish I had that. I get to experience that in a totally different way, but the actor is often the final piece of the puzzle to getting something over the line and getting it made. And so that's kind of feels like it's a different thing now. Like I now actually get to make the things that I want to be in.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, if you'll get Thrones, which was one of your very first jobs in the industry, like you were, I mean, you were probably just frankly thrilled to be there at first. The evolution is kind of fascinating over those years, because, you know, at the start, you couldn't have been thinking, okay, this, and you were, by the way, like replacing another actor. So it was a very unusual kind of circumstance. Yeah. Like you're not thinking like, I'm going to create this character that's going to be a feminist icon. this is a job.
It's a legit J-O-B job. Like I was just I didn't know what HBO was. I mean, I kind of did, but I didn't really. Like, I was just like, oh my God, I've got a job. And then the first season happened. And then I did a press tour and I was like, oh my God, people are going to watch the job. They're going to look at the job that I just did that I thought was just a job. Okay. And that, I mean, I had to learn really quickly the process. Just forget about whether it's a success or failure, just the process of making something and making something that was intending to be successful in that kind of way. So that was, I had no idea. And I think what you'll see with the jobs that I did in the time that I was doing Game of Thrones was A, I'm fitting it into my hiatus. Right. And B, I'm a bit of a kid in a candy shop. Just going, okay, cool, yeah, let's do that one.
No one can begrudge you, and I know you've been open about like Terminator, but like it's a Terminator movie. You get to do a Terminator movie. You get to be Sarah Connor with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Come on.
exactly. So it was very much that. It was only in the final couple of the seasons of the show that I started to go, oh no, wait a second, I can decide what I do, as opposed to just say yes to whatever's offered to me. That, because with every season of the show, I thought they were going to fire me. With every job that I did, I was amazed that someone gave me a job. I mean, the imposter syndrome really stuck around for a very long time, for a very, very, very long time. And it's taken me a huge mental upheaval to go, you know what? Give a rat's ass. Like, just do what you want to do. Do the thing. And if that means that you don't work for a minute because you're waiting for the thing that you really want to do, then do that. But it's definitely not with any plan in mind. It's just the plan is happiness. That is my plan. My plan is to try at all costs to get somewhere close to one of those two things.
It took you a minute, but you've gotten the healthy plan out. You figured it out, I think. Where are you at with like the ending? I hesitate to even bring it up. Like my brother wrote on Lost, so I've experienced this secondhand for years. People still give him crap and give them crap about the ending of that show. Were you surprised by the interpretations and the disappointment by many of the fans to the ending? And were you protective of your own character? I mean, you didn't write it, but you're still representing it in a way.
Yeah, it's a healthy mix of all of that, I think. It's incredibly flattering. Incredibly flattering that people care. Like, that's always good. I would rather someone care and have a very strong opinion than not give a flying whatever. Like, I don't know if I can swear on this, but I swear quite a lot, so I'm really sorry. I would rather that. And then on the other hand, I was completely waiting for it and was like, yeah, because we could have had, the ending could have been, we all go and start our hairdressers and people would be really disappointed. Like you could have,
I mean, it's a choice.
The fact that it ended was the thing. That's the thing that people are wrestling with, and so whatever you do, it's impossible. Completely and utterly impossible for you to ever please that many people who, for all of their different reasons, loved the show. And then there's the bit, then there's the two brains. Then there's me as Daenerys, who like will be in my heart till the day I die. Like, I love her. I speak of her as a separate individual. Call me people crazy. That's how I did it. And I'm fiercely protective over my family on the show and of the people who I admire and love and respect and watched. Oh, more than anything, the crew that made up the show, like, we did well, they were happy. So wanting that to be the case at all times was, right. I'm massively protective over that. But I get it. I get why people were pissed. I totally get it. But me being the actor, you can't do justice to the character that you've poured your blood, sweat, and tears into for a decade without getting on the same page. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, I'm not going to be there being like, fine, I'll do the scene, whatever. So pissed.
No, you have to buy in. You have to go all in. Yeah, yeah.
you have to be, you have to turn up. You have to turn up, and you have to, because why? Because you're doing it for you, and you're doing it for her, and you're doing it for the show, and you're doing it for the storytelling. So I'm an actor. I get given a story and I need to tell that story. Yes, I have a certain amount of autonomy over what flavor that might take, but the editor decides what it looks like and the writer decides what I'm saying. So you just got to go in and try and give it as much truth and honesty and, you know, and of yourself as you possibly can. See, I'm finding every way to talk about this.
No, I get it. But I mean, did you have a sneaky suspicion as you're doing that and you're committing 110% that like, oh, this might rub some people the wrong way?
Well, the first instinct when you read the scripts is you just get that gut punch of like, whoa, okay. You're thinking about, you know, it, your first reaction is that. It's okay. And then you start to go, oh, maybe people are gonna, yeah. I wonder. You don't know, but you do wonder. Right. And then also, I really, for 10 years, stayed away from reading anything about it. Aside from what people were saying to me personally, I was completely, largely unaware of what anyone was saying about anything. So when this kicked off, I kind of was like, well, I'm going to carry on doing what I've always done, which is sort of not really
earmuffs a little bit.
Yeah. Because if you read everything on every Reddit page, I would have jumped out of a window by now. 100%. Yeah. Like, so I suppose that's my spiel on.
I get it. The last thing I do want to mention, I feel like, and I've had Alden was actually on the podcast a few months back, and I feel like Solo's estimation by fans just grows. I feel like it was colored by the circumstances. It was a weird one. It was like, it had a lot of baggage and for good or for bad. And now it's like kind of this unicorn. I kind of love, like, I don't know if we're going to get another kind of like isolated Star Wars story on the big screen.
That makes me so happy because I loved Kira, loved her. I really, really did. I loved Han. I loved the story. I loved the people. I loved the experience. It was, I feel like it was one of those ones where, you know, when you know too much about a celebrity, and you go and watch that movie and you're just thinking about how many kids Angelina Jolie has. And I feel like our movie was that. Like everyone went in knowing what our dirty laundry looked like. And so therefore the separation I think was too great. You couldn't then separate that gossip from the overall experience. But I am so over the moon that people are posthumously enjoying it. Like, if you want a better word. I remember my brother watched it and he's much more, he lets me know the tides of the fandom Reddit environment, because I genuinely can't look at that.
Not exactly. Healthy for you to do it. They have a conduit, yes.
Yeah, so Ben will sometimes, when he deems it appropriate, will tell me. And I remember him, I remember Solo getting his seal of approval, and I was like, oh, well, maybe in 10 years, someone might stumble upon this movie again and be like, do you know what? I liked it.
It hasn't taken 10 years, so don't worry about it. There's also, it sounds like I think it's official that we're going to get a Lando series. Is there, not that I'm expecting you to break news here, could Kira return potentially?
I have heard nothing. I mean, and I really, like, this isn't me like going, oh my God, what am I allowed to say? Like, I absolutely nothing. But a Lando show makes so much sense. Give that man his own show. Yes.
Give him whatever he wants. It's the Donald Glover universe. So next, if we're so lucky, we're going to see you on the stage relatively soon in London, if we can make it out there.
Yes. Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but I think it should be the summer. I think, fingers crossed. It she's coming back.
You're going to get to do your thing and also get to enjoy that the whole new aspect of your career as a creative, as a creator of a comic book, as a producer. Congratulations on, so do I call it Mom or M-O-M? What's the, do
Mom, a, you can call it.
Okay. Mom, Mother of Madness. It's available for pre-order wherever you get your comics, on Amazon.
Right now. Yes.
Right now.
Limited edition signed copies are available if you'd like to pre-order from your comic book retailer before the 28th of June.
I love it.
There you go.
She's a pro. I'm glad it gave us an excuse to catch up today, Amelia. I'm glad you're staying well, and enjoy jumping out of airplanes with your mom.
Yeah, absolutely.
I said that like it's a daily occurrence. I assume you're going to do that later on today again.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a weekly occurrence.
Thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's been delightful.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.